You're listening to Humanitarian Radio with your hosts, Saint Tone and Janie Beauclair.
Good afternoon and welcome to this edition of Humanitarian Radio. I am here with our host today, Mr. Tony Saint Tone, and my name is Janie Beauclair, and we are going to hop right into good news and good things people are doing around the world.
That's right. Today we have Clyde Terry, the founder of Emerging Leaders. So let's get right into it. This is Clyde Terry.
Hi, we're back here with Humanitarian Radio. We have Clyde Terry as our guest, and he is the head of Emerging Leaders. Clyde, just tell us a little bit about it. Emerging Leaders, what is that?
Emerging Leaders is it's a program that's designed to help at-risk adults who are coming out of the prison system. When I say at-risk, is they're at risk of going back into the system if they don't get some kind of training or life skills that can help them find employment and get back on the right path.
Now, is this something that you started? And how long has it been going on?
It's been going on since June of 2009. I actually started a few things. How I got into this was when I was working patrol at Compton, in the city of Compton, there was a young kid that had been shot. His father had been shot in the back of the head, and this kid had been shot in the chest. And I watched him lay on the ground, and my son was that age at the time. He was 7 at the time. And I could see this kid laying on the ground with this expression on his face, like, what just happened to me? Like, with the will to survive, but not even knowing what the will to survive is. Well, I don't know what a 7-year-old would know, but I don't think a 7-year-old would have the will to survive. So I can remember seeing the tears roll down the side of his face. And it was, and I'd been to Iraq, and I'd seen, work in the city of Compton and working in Watts for as long as I'd worked there. And being in this business for 17 years, I'd seen a lot of death. And I'd probably seen more death in Iraq in that 1 year than I'd probably seen in most people see in a lifetime. But I just wasn't ready for that. I had to turn around and just really regroup and get myself together. And most of the deputies, even the firefighters that showed up, all had to just take a pause before they could actually step into this. And in that moment, I guess the declaration was so powerful that I guess the ethos heard it, I said that I was going to do something. I said I'd been working this job for 17 years, and I didn't want to do 30 years in this job and didn't make a difference. And we'd put, when I came into department in 1991, we had 18,000 people in custody. And here it was 2007, we still had 18,000 people in custody, and people were still getting killed. So I said I was going to do something. So instead of complaining about it, I did something about it. And I didn't know where to start, didn't have leadership. I had leadership skills because I led people in combat and other places, but I didn't have the community-based leadership that I needed to get a program off the ground, to get out there and do something. And I went to churches and tried to get them to help me and to come up with this idea. I went to other people that I thought were leaders in the communities, that were pillars in the community, and they thought that they were kind of resigned and cynical about it. Oh, well, you're never going to make a difference.
And when you say you worked for the department and you were on patrol, a lot of these people that listen to us are from the other side of the country. So let's tell them who you were patrolling for, who you were working for.
So I work for the LA County Sheriff's Department, and I've been working with the department now for going on 23 years.
Wow, okay.
And before that, you were in the military?
Before that, I was in the Marines. But when I went to Iraq, I was there as a police advisor for the State Department. And I trained the Iraqi police. I was one of the first people on the ground to train the Iraqi police.
Okay. So go back to tell me more about how you got this started. So you had gone to churches, you had gone to all these different people to try to get help, to get this started, just to get some support.
Right.
And it seemed like no one was very interested in what your cause was.
There were so many people who were resigned about the process that didn't believe it was possible.
And they
said, well, man, it's been this way for years and you ain't going to stop it. And
it is what it is.
It is what it is, yeah.
Okay.
So I got frustrated. And so I started looking at, I'm just going to do whatever I can do. And I went out and I found, gang members on the streets, and they said, God looks out for babies and fools, and I'm a long way from being a baby, so I must have been a little foolish to I'd find like a group of Mexican gang members, a group of black gang members, and I would just go up and start talking to them about their life, and they would listen, you know, and they were actually interested in the conversation.
Right. They weren't just shutting you out. They're like, hey, we actually want some help.
Well, they didn't even know, because I didn't even know. I mean, I just saw people and I was like, man, look, what are you doing, man? Like, why are you here? Didn't tell them who I was. And then it kind of dawned on me, like, hey, you might want to tell people who you are. And I was like, man, I just, you know, it's easy to put you in jail, but, you know, what would keep you out of jail? And that's kind of started from there. And then I went to do some stuff with P. Carroll's organization called A Better Los Angeles. It's just funny how the universe works. I was a watch deputy at Compton, and one day one of the girls bought in The Secret, and we were watching The Secret, and I was like, oh, that's pretty interesting. Yeah. And so I took it home and I just put it in my DVD player, and I would sleep with it on. So I didn't even watch it; I just heard the Subliminal. Message. Heard the message, right?
Wow.
And then I'd have it on, and I'd get up and I'd put it on the TV, and then I'd walk through the house and I'd do my stuff, and it was just there. And then I ended up going to a training unit, and then when I got to the training unit in June, I started talking to somebody about The Secret. They said, "Well, we teach a class like that on the department."
And wow, that
was
really?
Yeah, really? Yeah. Okay, that's a shocker to me. Yeah. But that's excellent. That's great. I mean, the fact that they're that advanced thinking.
Well, the sheriff's just an innovative thinker and just out of the box, and you know, he's a visionary.
Right? Yes. Yeah,
he lives in the world of possibility.
Yes.
Right? You know, some people might call it airy fairy, but you know, some people are stuck in their reality, and he's stuck in the possibility of, or not stuck, but he lives in the world of what's possible as opposed to not, you know,
isn't
to
that what, refreshing?
What is, right?
Oh my gosh.
And he's, you know, really a unique person in that sense. And
this is Sheriff Baca.
Sheriff Leroy Baca, yes.
Just so everyone knows.
Yeah. Yes. And so they said, yeah, we're teaching this class. So I went to it in August. And then this is all sounds good. But, you know, some of the language, I mean, this language doesn't translate to people down in the streets. So someone says, well, you should be teaching this. And I said, oh, really? And they say, well, the guy that's teaching is going to be retiring. Well, September, I was teaching the class, and the guy left me. So I ended up, I never went through formal training for it. And then I began to develop myself. I went to Landmark Education, and I learned NLP, and I went to School of Hypnotherapy or College of Hypnotherapy. Working on my degree in organizational leadership, and it was all in the same realm. And so I just began to build that muscle, and through that I found some of the most powerful people in the game of transformation. Reverend Bernard, Michael Bernard Beckwith from Agape, Matt James from NLP, the Empowerment Partnership, Lisa Nichols from The Secret. There's a list of people. The list just goes on. Colin Powell. I got a chance to sit down and talk to Colin Powell about, you know, what I was doing, and this is kind of his work since he's retired, you know, from the Army, or, you know, as a Joint Chief, and from politics. And I started getting all these people just began to fall into my life, just like in line, like
bam,
bam, bam, bam. Yeah, it did. And so I just realized that you know, I was on the right path. And so, I mean, that's Emerging Leaders, and it's just evolved since then. So Emerging Leaders came about because we wanted to create a community-based organization with a law enforcement partnership, which is another of the sheriff's out-of-the-box thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, but all of these things, Emerging Leaders, A Better Los Angeles, anything that you want is really in the ethos. You just got to claim it, you know, and so we went and claimed it, you know, and then when I claimed it, then all the pieces that were included in that began to fall into place.
Was there ever a point, and you've been doing this almost 4 years, right?
I've been doing it in bits and pieces since September of 2007.
Okay.
But Emerging Leaders since 2009.
2009. Was there ever a point where you wanted to give up on this?
There's a lot of points that I wanted to give up, right?
Yeah.
I can remember starting my first class, and there was four people in the class, and there's three people in the class, and then one guy walks in and he goes, I was across the street we're right off of Crenshaw on 54th Street. And he goes, I was over at the EDD office and I saw the Urban League and I wanted to come over here. And they told me I need to come in this class. And, you know, he said a few expletives and he's like, you know, I don't know what the F y'all doing in here, but it better be something good, man, because I'm ready to go back to prison. Now I ain't going back to prison. I'm a whole court on the streets. He had no idea I was a police. And so, you know, but I talked to a lot of people and they were like, well, there's no way that, you know, gang members or ex-felons are going to want to
come
and hang out in a program with me, right? And or being, you know, I'm not going to be able to tell them anything. And, you know, these are pretty reputable guys that were saying this on the streets. But then what was interesting is one of the guys that said this is pretty reputable in the prison world and pretty reputable out here in the streets. His son said, well, Dad, everybody doesn't want to listen to you either. His son was in college. His son was a college student. He was like, because I kind of like what he's saying, and, you know, and it's just a different perspective. But everybody didn't want to hear that whole thugged out thing either. Right. And that kind of gave me some. That was like my thing to go like, you're on the right track.
Yeah.
And then so as we started to do this, the guy that came in, the fourth guy that came in to join our first class, ended up being like the spokesperson for that class, and then he went on to speak for the Urban League, and he found his voice, and that thing led to another. But every class is different. Every class you go, should I just get out while I'm on top, right? Yeah. You know, kind of thing.
And what's the average amount of people you have in a class at this point now?
At this point, about 30 to 30. I'd say about 30 to 40.
And are they from all different? Like, are they straight out of prison? Or are they just off the street? Or are they a combination?
A combination. Some have just gotten out of prison. We have some in our current class and in our prior class that had done 17 years in prison. Mm-hmm. And that one lady had done 17 years in prison. And she... She did 17 years in prison, and she got out of prison like on a Thursday, and Monday she was in our class.
Right. Okay, gotcha.
You know, and some people have been out for 2 or 3 years and they heard about us and it's like, man, you know, people have told me. And then a lot of people from neighborhoods have gone back to their neighborhoods and like, you got to go to Emerging Leaders.
Excellent. And, so the word's spreading within the neighborhoods.
Within the communities, right?
Yeah, yeah. Is there, I want everyone to know, how many people have graduated and how many people have gone back to jail? Because I think that number is astonishing. I think it shows how reputable this program is.
It's obviously working.
Right. Well... I say this is me saying it.
Yep.
I don't know if it's us or just the fact that, and I don't know what people believe in, but, you know, whether it's God, the ethos, the universe, Buddha, I don't know what it is, but whatever it is that you believe in, you know, has had its hand over our program. Mm-hmm. And that's been the blessing for us. That's been the thing that has kept us on track. But we've had, with this class that's going to graduate September 5th, it'll be 420 people, and to date we had 26, like 32 have been arrested in 4 years.
Wow. Right.
And we take everything from bank robbers to murderers, and we have, you know, substance abusers, of course. But for the most part, we're not taking lightweight criminals. We take everything.
You take everything. So no one gets turned away.
No one gets turned away.
So
Even community members, we take, because people from the community or like family members are like, well, if you could do that for them,
right? What can you do for me?
Right,
right. Like, yeah. I'm sure there's parents out there or cousins or relatives that say, mm-hmm. Hey, man, you've turned yourself around. I know what you did, but what if you did? I want some of it.
Right.
We got another one in the family you should be talking to, exactly. And that kind of thing.
You know, and I think it's incredible that you've been able to change 400 lives out there, but not only 400 lives, because I believe that has multiplied times whatever, could be 100, because that one person affects so many other people,
right.
Just by example,
right.
Just by them being who they are and saying, wow, if I could change,
right.
Then you could change, and maybe even keeping people off the path that they've already gone down. It's like, right. Look, I went down that path. You don't want to go to jail.
Right.
You've got an opportunity to stay out of jail. Stay out of jail.
Right.
And they've already transformed themselves. So you're nipping people in the bud before they even get started that sense.
You know, when I was working the streets, I used to always say, I worked in the inner city most of my career, so it was always like, they know better, right? I grew up in the inner city. So if they grew up in the inner city, they should know better too. But there's a saying that if you knew better, you would do better.
True.
Right? And a lot of times, people know what they know. And it wasn't until I started doing this to realize that, you know, one of the books that we use is The Five Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. And the first agreement is be impeccable with your word. But we're taught from an early age... language, and inside of language is the thing that begins to shape our world. Like language, words don't describe your world, words create your world. And so when you live in an environment where people are creating your world, that, you know, crime is the way, don't trust the police, you know, rob, steal, and kill, that there's no hope, right? Or because you're black or Latino, that there's no way for you because America's not going to let you, right? The world is indifferent. Right. People are indifferent.
Right.
Government's indifferent. You know, money's indifferent. Mm-hmm. You know, if you buy into the narrative that there's no way, then there is no way. And if there's a way, then, you know, you'll make a way. But it'll be your own unique way, not the way that it's designed by someone else. And so what we really worked on doing was creating a new context for them to live by. And I think when we created that new context is what allowed us to have the success we have, because people begin to look at life from a different perspective. And they start to look at life from what's possible, not what's impossible.
Totally. And you're giving them, I think what you're doing is you're planting seeds for these people to just see if they grow or not.
Right.
And you're giving them different possibilities. I believe that a lot of people are a product of their environment. And if their environment is, well, you know, I come from a criminal background family. My dad was a criminal. My uncle's a criminal. My friends are criminals. And we're all criminals. That's all I know.
That's what you know, right?
And, you know, if you're a politician, then it's like my dad's a politician, and I'm a politician, so we're all politicians. Yes. Unless you have anything else coming in to show you some different way, you really don't know any different. So I think what you're bringing is just something like a choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a choice for them to go, hey, there is a different way.
Right.
And going back to the way words you know, create your world, I was listening to something that Wayne Dyer said, and he says, if you believe this world is a beautiful place, mm-hmm. then you are absolutely correct.
Right.
And if you believe this world is a miserable place, you're absolutely mm-hmm. correct. Because whatever you choose, you will subconsciously try to find reasons and things to pick out to justify your thoughts.
Well,
simple as that.
The way we look at the world is what's going on inside of us, and it's holographic. So, you know, I project out to the world what's going on with me. You know, our eyes don't see, our brain sees. And so as I'm looking out into the world, I see the world, whatever my dominant belief is, that's what I see in the world.
Mm.
You know, and then, you know, so if I believe that the world is evil, then my unconscious mind goes to look for evidence to validate evilness, right?
Evilness, yes.
If I look at the world as being full of possibility, then I start looking at the possibilities in life. So when something happens, I go, wow, what's the possibility inside of this, as opposed to woe me?
You're not the victim anymore.
You're not the victim anymore.
Yeah, and that, I think that's the hardest thing for people sometimes
to get out of and take
responsibility. It's like, oh, I made this choice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because once you say I'm responsible, it's like I can't blame anyone else. It's like, right. Oh, I made this choice. I didn't go to jail. That guy put me in jail. It's like, No, you were with him in the car. You were with him wherever.
Right.
So you made the choice. You made the choice.
Right.
You have a choice every single day, and every choice that you've made has brought you to this point.
Mm-hmm.
The beauty of it is that you have that ability still to make another choice,
right,
to move yourself out of that environment,
right,
whatever environment you're in.
I used to tell them in the streets, I didn't take you to jail. I gave you a ride. Right?
Uh-huh.
Right, because you did whatever you did to put yourself in jail. I just gave you a ride.
Right. I just picked you up.
You
were heading there.
Right, so
that's a great statement.
and it's a game. When we're out there in the field, it's a game. You go commit crimes to see if you can get away with it, and you get away with it most of the time. And then we do everything we can to catch you. And then, you know, that's a game we play. And
right.
it's like watching the Roadrunner and they punch in and they chase each other. At the end of the day, they punch out and they're friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we tell them, like, look, you know, it's not personal. It's just the game. This is a game I signed up for, and that's a game you signed up for. And so it's not personal until you make it personal, right? You know, if you commit crimes and you get away with them, and you got away all the time, it wouldn't be a fun game.
Right.
Right? The reason why you sneak and get crafty and do all that stuff is because you want to get away. And the reason why we're crafty and, you know, we have blackout lights and, you know, all that stuff is because we're crafty too, right? Because we got to play the game that you're in so we can catch you. And I go, so arresting you is the easiest thing to do, right? So you can either keep doing life on the installment plan, right? Or you can transform your life, right? And so we're not here you're not here to get things right. You're here to see life rightly, right?
Right.
And so when people start to see that what's possible for them, when they start to see what's available to them, when they start to get a whole new context in life, and they get that none of their life that they've lived has been their choice, it's been cause and effect.
Totally. Right? Yeah.
So if I'm not going to be like my father, or I'm not going to have a criminal, I'm not going to be part of a criminal element, well, then they become the other side of that, and then everything that they do is almost just as bad as not being that, right? Mm-hmm. And so so they have to be almost pressed with something bad so that they can do something good.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, one of the other things that we look at is that they say, well, if everybody in your life tells you that you're going to be just like your dad, well, we don't think in words, we think in pictures. And so as we start to think in pictures, we start to visualize people that are in jail. So if I'm thinking about my father's in jail, then I got a picture of him. So if I'm going to be just like him, then I start to move in that direction.
And you start to visualize that.
Because it's an unconscious move, drive towards, because we move towards the thing we think about the most.
Right.
You know, and we don't think in words, we think in pictures. So the more I have a picture of that, the more I start to move in the direction of the most dominant picture.
Yes.
So our process is to create a new picture, a new paradigm, a new view.
Let's talk about the specifics of being inside your classroom. People come into the class, they sit down. How do you start this format of people who have been loose and reckless, so to speak, to actually sit and pay attention to you? What do you do in that class that keeps their attention? I know that you bring Tony and many other artists in.
Mm-hmm.
And what's your thoughts on bringing people from the outside?
Yeah, like what type of people do you...
And the types of people that you feel affect your audience?
Well, I can say this. Our retention rate is about 97%.
Wow.
So, and they are required to be here and be in a seat, not come and sign a paper and leave.
Okay.
Because, you know, we're not going to have them come in and sign a paper and go commit a crime and go, well, I was with the police, you know.
Right.
So, no, you need to be sitting in a seat for them 3 hours.
Accountable.
So, you know, every class is different. We don't come in with a, we have a curriculum, which inside that curriculum is life skills. You know, changing thought. We have career development. We have entrepreneurship. We have Toastmasters that comes in, so they're comfortable with speaking and presenting themselves. As far as guests, you know, sometimes the guests are consistent, like, you know, you and Tone, and then some are just people that show up in that class because they're needed for that class.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a powerful speaker, a guy named Kane Vincent Dyer, who was the Kangaroo Bandit. He's committed the most bank robberies, never got caught, and actually robbed over 30 banks, and just realized, you know, after being introduced to Agape, that he was out of alignment with his integrity, and walked into the federal building in Westwood and turned himself in. He says, "I'm the guy you were looking for."
Wow.
And they were no closer to catching him than before he did the first bank robbery. Right. Wow. And he had stopped for like 2 or 3 years. And so he had taken his money and started investing in and bought nightclubs and bought George Clooney's first mansion. And, you know, so he would have never been caught. But he walked in looking at 100 to 270 years and or 207 years, walked in and said, "Hey, I'm the guy you've been looking for." Right. But, you know, when you have people like that come in who says, like, "I've walked in your shoes.
Mm-hmm. I've lived your life.
I've lived your life. But I was unhappy." And he told me, he said, "I had over $11 million. And, you know, he says, "I was worth $11 million. And he says, "I had the most money I'd ever had in my life. And I was the most miserable I'd ever been in my life." Mm-hmm. You know, so, and we have Freeway Rick Ross, who was involved in they talked about the Iran-Contra scandal and the CIA and drugs in South Central Los Angeles. He comes in and talks. And it just depends on what's needed in that class. When we walk into a room, or when I walk into the room and my other trainers walk into the room, they walk into the room from a place of nothingness. And whatever speaks in that moment is what we speak into.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So no two classes are the same.
Right, right. And one thing I definitely noticed with you guys is you quickly adapt to the situation. And I think that's what makes the class so successful, is because you're not just reading from a textbook, say, "Everyone turn to page 3 and we're going to read this and now you're going to get an exam on it." It's more taking personal interest in what's involved in the class and what each individual needs. Mm-hmm. I've seen you talk to someone for 20 or 30 minutes, one person mm-hmm. alone, and address that one person's situation right there on the spot. And really, as you're addressing that person's situation, other people are relating to it. Mm-hmm. Either it's their sister, or it's them personally, or it's a cousin, or it's a friend, but they're all getting something from it. And I think that's what's so powerful about it, is that you don't just say, hey, that's a personal thing, I'll have to address that at another time. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, you hit it right there when it's coming up. And I think that's what makes it so successful, because there's structure there for what you're trying to do, but it's not limited to a textbook. Yeah. It's not limited to, I need to get these things done before we can go into your personal problem about your kid or something.
We're not linear in our approach. It's a 360-degree approach. And we touch it from there. We don't say, okay, well, we got to get this lesson done, because all the lessons all come back to each other. They all overlap.
They all overlap,
right? So yeah.
You should start teaching for schools.
Everyone tells me that. But
honestly, because it keeps their attention. Right. It's not this textbook, old school of going, this is how you learn. Study these.
Graduation rate would be much better.
Well, you know, everybody tells me that, and I go, that's not my journey.
Right.
I don't have a problem with teaching someone to show someone how to do it,
right.
But that's not my journey. This is my journey. And so, there's various paths to get to the same point, but this is my journey.
And you have a specific amount of weeks that you require them to hang with you?
8 weeks.
8 weeks. And then after?
Three hours a day for 8 weeks.
And then after they're done their 8 weeks, then what happens?
Well, after 8 weeks, we're just now getting the wraparound services, because I just created a 501(c). So for the last 4 years, I've been paying for it out of my pocket. Man. And you know, really by the grace of God, that, you know, we've had people who have stepped up to the plate and said, let me do this for you, let me do that for you. Maybe not donate money, but just being able to give us resources.
Before we go and let you answer my question, how can people in our community here throw money at you and help you to keep this going? Where can they reach you and where can they find you?
Our email address is emerging_leaders@yahoo.com.
Okay.
And we have a Emerging Leaders Academy. We have an Emerging Leaders Academy Facebook page. When you go to the page, it'll say leadership. It's a blue banner that has leadership. They can reach us there. And I do a lot of it myself, so I need to update the page, our Emerging Leaders page. And then they can also contact me at 424-231-5273,
and
leave a message.
If there's anybody out there that can help to do that, keep up his website for him, that volunteer level will definitely be most appreciated as well. Listen, this guy's been doing this on his own, out of his own dollar, out of his own pocket and his household for a lot of years, and it's time the community really gets behind him. And you guys shake a few bucks out of your pockets and throw it his way, because obviously it benefits us all to turn criminals around and people who have just been improperly trained growing up. It benefits us all to change the society, and I'm sure you can hear that Clyde is doing a bang-up job in turning this around, and imagine if you threw your money into the pot, what this guy is capable of doing. So on that note, after they're done with their 8 weeks, then they have a graduation.
Yeah, so I just want to say thank you for that. And one of the things that we've talked about is, you know, we're going to pay for it one way or another. Either we're going to pay because we're going to be a victim, or we're going to pay to, you know, pay for this program,
right?
Or we're going to pay because we're going to pay to incarcerate them.
Exactly.
I prefer to pay and back you, my friend.
Thank you.
And I'm very excited that you finally got this to a nonprofit situation where people can make donations to you, and you can keep this going and maybe take on more students. I know that you have a place here in Los Angeles and you have a place in Long Beach. Where's your next place going to be?
I know Pasadena. And then I've also been asked, because people have heard about our program around the country, and actually in Jamaica, Brazil, Ethiopia,
wow.
Sudan,
word's getting
and
out.
Yeah, in South Africa.
Wow.
So we've gotten opportunities. Those are opportunities that are coming up. So we're going to take some of our graduates with us but when they go there, they have to help build an irrigation system, a school, a church or something. They have to do something that's going to give back, but then they'll bring that back to the community. From our global perspective, it's is to take a neighborhood, like take Watts, for example, and you take the Bloods, Crips and the Latino gangs, and have them adopt a parish or a province in like South Africa, and they collect shoes, clothes, or whatever, and send it there. Now they're fighting for something bigger than their neighborhood.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Which actually starts to bring unity, and maybe we'll, you know, go down to South America or Central America, and then they start to realize that we're more alike than we are different.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And begin to create that kind of context of creating, because our goal is, we're not anti-gang, we're not anti-drugs, because the more you push against something, the more it exists. So that which you resist persists.
Yes.
So our goal is to create another world that's sexier than those worlds.
Right.
And then what happens is people start to come over here and go, wow, this is kind of, I never knew this was available to me. And then they leave that world and come to this world. Because gang started as a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Gang started as, you know, from language, right? So we're giving them new language. It creates a new world for them, a new existence. Inside that world, they start to live and dwell in the world of possibility, the world of hope, the world of transformation, as opposed to living in the world of resignation and cynicism. And fear.
We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we will be right back. Stay tuned with Clyde Terry and Emerging Leaders. Okay.
So now, that was good. I'm glad you did that.
Okay, keep going. I want to bring us back. We're back with Clyde Terry and Emerging Leaders, and I want to bring us back to the conversation of graduation, and there's a specific reason I want to hit that.
Mm-hmm.
We've performed at quite a few of them over the, you know, the time frame that we've known you guys. And something that really hits me a lot at every graduation ceremony is a lot of times it's the first time that they've graduated from anything. Mm-hmm. And it affects these guys so tremendously. You see the emotional state that it puts them in, that they've actually accomplished a graduation because they didn't graduate from school.
Mm-hmm.
Or they didn't graduate from, you know, other adventures in their life, and this is their first graduation.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a young lady that was in her mid-60s.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time she graduated. Tell us about that.
She never graduated from anything. So her biggest thing was, Clyde, am I going to graduate? Every day was, Clyde, am I going to graduate? Because I never graduated from anything. And she couldn't read or write. And she didn't feel comfortable in her ability to read and write. So we had her write every day. And we had her read something every day.
Wow.
And she started to get confidence in her ability to read and write. And she just started to feel good about herself because we didn't make her feel bad about it. We worked with her through the process.
She was seeing her own progress.
Yes. Yeah. And we went and got her a cap and gown with a tassel. And
affected me greatly, that woman, I gotta say.
Before we started the ceremony, we did the benediction, and then we had her come up and we gave her a cap and gown, and that had the most profound impact on her.
And the rest of the students that day. Everybody was crying.
Yeah. And for a lot of them, they're, you know, they say, you know, like, well, I have a new relationship to the police that I never had before.
Yeah.
And they go, who would have thought? And there's people that I've put in prison that have come through our program.
Wow.
There's a guy in our current program that when I was working on a federal task force, I put in prison. And his wife came through the program. And then he followed his wife in the program. And so he's in that right now. And
that's an interesting dynamic for you, isn't it?
And he says, well, he says, I want to thank you because you saved my life.
Wow.
He says, because when I went to prison, all of the guys that I hung out with were all killed. He says, and if I had been on the streets, I'd probably be dead too. He says, so you literally saved my life, and now you're saving my life in another way. And he says, I didn't know you, but it's funny how we're connected because that case put me in prison. But then one of his good friends in prison is one of my friends, and they ended up meeting when he came to speak to the class.
Right? Ah.
And he was able to validate.
We're going to take a quick commercial break at this moment. We have one of Clyde's students that is under distress, and we're going to play a song by Saint Tone called Mary Lost Herself, and it's about people realizing that they've been living for other people for a long time and finally taking a look at themselves, which is highly appropriate at this moment. So enjoy Mary Lost Herself. You can find the song on sainttone.com. Thank you.
change the color of her hair, and the music that she played wasn't the same. With a new man in her life, so determined to make it right, she would twist and turn to keep this spark alive. But Mary Sunshine Dream, in reality black, like a branch you've been too much, you know she just snapped. Mary lost herself, pleasing someone else, her reflection on empty shell. Mary lost herself. Let the time seem so right, everybody's got a compromise, but she never found the strength to draw the line. Mary Sunshine has now gone to black. If you've been a friend too much, you know we just met. Mary lost herself, pleasing someone else. Lone soul's got nothing left. Mary lost herself. Mary lost
with Clyde Terry. We had to take a moment. You heard a young lady crying in the background. We are filming live at one of Clyde's classes, and he has another speaker in there speaking at the moment to the class. But they were doing a lesson which brought a lot of emotion to one of the young ladies in the class. And of course, you know, it was the right thing for Clyde to skip away from us so that he could go assist in comforting her and getting her through the breakdown. And Clyde, you're back with us, and we want to just touch on that for a minute. You go through a lot of this type thing in these classes where people get to a breakdown point because they've realized things in their life in different perspectives, and you push a lot of buttons, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about that? How do you feel about that when things like that happen? How does that make you feel internally in your own body, because obviously you've got to be affected, but then also when you see them breaking down, you know that they're getting past these humps.
Right. Well, our intention is, I don't know necessarily to break them down in that sense, but
it's a personal thing.
To get them present to the impact in their life, the impact the payoff that they've had in doing whatever they've done and what that's cost them and cost other people in their lives and the impact that it's had on them and other people in their lives. And when they get present to the impact, emotions like what we just experienced come up. Mm-hmm. And so we never want to leave them in that space.
Right.
We always want to make sure that we do everything to empower them so that they can move to the next level. But it's we have to deal with the junk. Get rid of the junk. It's like being sick. When you throw up or you go to the bathroom, that when you get it out of your system, it's when you feel better. And so it's like all the emotional garbage and baggage that we've been holding on to, we suppress. It doesn't, if the mind can't handle it, it sends it to the body.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the unconscious mind is always looking for the opportunity to release it. Right. But we do such a good job of suppressing it that we do so in here we do exercises that bring all that stuff up to the surface so we can get rid of it. And right. Now in that empty space, we can create something new in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's almost like emptying out your closet of stuff that you've just been tucking away. And you finally pull it out. You're like, oh, my God, I didn't want to look at that. And you're like, you got to look at it because you got to get rid of it.
But now you got room for new clothes.
Right. Yeah. But what we do is we let them go through the process. We don't baby them through it. We let them go through the process because they have to. They have to deal with it because what people do is run and console them and they never really get to deal with it on their own. So we give them the space to just kind of cry it out, work it out. I mean, some of the biggest guys, I mean, you see big old buff guys come in here and they go through whatever they go through. And, and it's just for them to work through it. And this is a space that we do it and this is a space where they can leave it. If they want to take, we tell them, if you want to take your garbage with you when you leave after 8 weeks, you're more than happy, but I'm sure you won't want it.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's what we operate from. So I've been fortunate that I've been trained by some of the best people in the transformation business. And then the other thing is not just the training, but it's just I'm crystal clear that this is my purpose.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. That makes a difference.
It makes a huge difference, I think.
Yeah. And so I'm a vehicle. I'm a vessel. Mm-hmm. The word doesn't come from me. It comes through me. And, you know, sometimes I just get on a ride, I just come in, I'm present to what's in the room and the energy in the room. But we just had a retired congresswoman come in, and we've had other officials come in, and they go, when you walk in the door, there's just a vibration that's here that's just, you can't even explain it, but you just know you're in the right place, right? And that's what we generate. It just, there's so much energy that gets generated inside the room, and the vibration is so high in the room that when people walk in, they feel like home. They want to be a part of it. And that's been the thing, is that we haven't had the money, but the right people show up at the right time in order to keep us moving.
Mm-hmm. I want to tell you something that Tony and I just experienced while you were counseling the young lady, the young lady that had the breakdown. The class was going through why don't you tell about the exercise, and then I'll tell you what we witnessed.
So the game is called, the exercise is called the dying game, or the dying exercise. And they have to list 8 people that are important in their life, 8 goals that are important in their life, and then 8 possessions that they have.
Okay.
And so a lot of times they struggle even finding 8 people or 8 goals or 8 possessions. And one of the things that I just told them there is I said, you spend your whole life spending money that you don't have, going broke to buy stuff that you can't afford to impress people you don't even like.
Right.
Right. But your whole life is on the floor.
So they go through this process of they list their 8 and their 8 and their 8.
Mm-hmm.
And then what do you do?
And then as we go through the dying process, you go to the doctor. The doctor tells you have an old cell cancer. And then they start going through the dying process because there's no treatment for it.
Okay.
We just have stuff to keep you comfortable. And as they go through the dying process and getting their house in order, they got to get rid of 2 people, 2 possessions, 2 goals.
Okay.
And then they go through the next phase of the dying process and they get rid of 2 more.
Okay.
And then they go through it again and they get rid of 2 more. And then the last part, they get rid of 1. So they're left with 1 goal, 1 person, and 1 possession.
And the one of each thing is generally the thing that is most important to them at this
right.
time.
And they don't get to say my family. They have to list their kids individually.
The one.
And so they go through the whole process of like, which child should I leave? And it just has them start to think, because we want them to generate thought. And so we know that some people are going to keep their kids. They ball them up instead of throw them in the middle of the room. They'll ball them up and they'll go, and this is why your life doesn't work, because things are designed a certain way, and so we told you how the process was designed, and you won't do it the way it was designed. You do it your way, and then you wonder why your life doesn't work. So when inside of the process is a whole lot of teaching moments.
Yeah.
And then we look at, okay, well, why is that person important to you? And then they have to write a letter to the person that they left behind.
And this is the part that Tony and I walked in on while you were with your young lady.
Mm-hmm.
The teacher of the class was asking each person who their one person was and to read the letter that they left behind.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the young ladies in the class, the person she left behind, the last person she wrote the letter to was you.
Mm.
And she read the letter, and the letter was that she wanted you to continue to do this because you were touching so many lives, and she felt you were the most important thing in her life because you had not only touched her, but she watched what you were doing to everybody else in the class and knew what you were doing to the community and all of her people. And so if she had one last person to pick on earth with her, it was you.
Wow.
How heavy is that for you?
Wow.
Do you see the impact that you're having on these people? She didn't pick her daughter. She didn't pick her mother or her best friend.
Mm.
She picked the guy that's changing her life. And for me, that was just a beautiful moment. Beautiful. And I wanted you to know that.
Well, thank you. Up with him now.
Exactly.
Well, see, and that was one of the things that they were talking about is that most of these people don't know. You think that they know, oh, well, she knows that I love her.
She knows I love her.
And they know that I really like them and all this. And it's like, no, they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that they were saying is that 95% of the people that are on the floor right now don't know how you really feel about
mm-hmm.
them. So he was saying, you guys didn't realize you were going to come in here and die within 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So go out there and tell the people that you care about them and let them know
mm-hmm.
what you think. And I got to tell you, every time I come to your class, and I've been to a lot of them over the past year, where I come to speak, I always learn something. And, you know, and I am a studier of this, similar to yourself, but there's always something to learn. And I always feel like when I'm talking to someone, I'm talking to myself at the same time, as far as if it's counseling or if it's something positive or it's a message. I just think there's so much energy in that room where you can't help but get swept up into it and stay here and actually you start to feed off it. You're like, oh my God, I want more of this. And you become a sponge. I think the stuff you're doing is fantastic. And I want people to know where they can go again to help you. We're going to post it on our website, which is humanitarianradio.com, and our Facebook, which is Facebook.com/humanitarianradio. We're going to post your information there. But again, how do they get a hold of you? How do they get a hold of your organization to make a donation or to just get involved?
They can email us at emerging_leaders@yahoo.com.
Okay.
Or they can go to our Facebook page, Emerging Leaders Academy, and it has a blue banner that says leadership. They can get us there, or they can contact me at 424-231-5273.
Excellent.
And I have to choose between paying for a website being built or paying for other things that we need to do. And this is, you know, it's been coming out of my own pocket. Well, even though we have a 501(c), it's still coming out of my pocket until we start to receive
funding. You really use? What can you use right now?
Money.
Cash? Volunteers?
Yeah.
Volunteers to handle your website or start your website and things like that?
Yeah, we could use that. Or, you know, people that are willing to give them an opportunity to work. Because we're sending transformed people to you, and we're willing to be with that corporation to say that we'll be there to mentor them if they have any problems in the workplace. Because some of these guys have never worked. They've been in and out of prison since they were, you know, 14, 15 years old.
So you need corporations to join forces with you and accept these people that you have just transformed.
Yes.
Right. And honestly, I think the people that are coming out of your class are probably much better balanced.
Better stock.
And better stock than people that aren't.
Than what is out there.
So
absolutely.
I think it's an excellent choice to make. And just real quick, out of the 430 people that have gone through your class, alumni, after the past 4 years. Do you keep in contact with these people? Is there anything that you're doing to say, hey, once a month we're going to get together, or a continuing course?
Or do they come back to you and go, hey, this is what I'm doing now?
A lot, all of that. all of the above, right? Excellent. So a lot of times they come back and sit in the class, they go through it again because they're like, I got it, but now I need to come and really get it.
Yeah, absorb it.
Because like now I got a taste of it, I'm out there using the world, I really understand it, it's starting to really click. Mm-hmm. They're like popcorn. Right, some people pop in the beginning. You know, like you put popcorn in the microwave, whatever. Mm-hmm. And one kernel pops right out the gate, and then one, you know, you pull out, and the timer goes off, and you pull it out, and you're opening up the bag, and it's still popping. Yeah. Well, that's kind of how it is. Some people will pop at graduation, right? And then they'll come back and go, I need to get some more of that. Mm-hmm. But we're gonna have an alumni event next year. I want to say in January or February. We're looking at it right now, but Reverend Michael Beckwith is gonna be a part of it, and Don Miguel Ruiz, who wrote the Five Agreements.
Nice, how nice.
Excellent. Most people will know the Four Agreements, but he has a revision to it called the Fifth Agreement. Okay. And he's going to speak, and whatever money we raise, they're going to donate to the program.
Excellent.
Because we use the Five Agreements inside of the program. We start off with the Five Agreements, mm-hmm. being, you know, one, being impeccable with your word, two, never take anything personal, three, never make assumptions, four, always do your best, and five, be skeptical but willing to listen. So one of the things we tell them is, don't let us crack your head open and just pour stuff in and challenge everything that we say.
And they do.
I've seen that. And we tell them, but then it also takes the edge off, because if you tell them, challenge what we say, but what we want you to also challenge what the world says to you and what you take in.
Yeah.
But most of all, challenge what you say to yourself.
True.
Right?
True.
And then ask yourself, the challenge that I'm about to make, where is it coming from?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Right? And when they start to get that, they start to get present to the world that they live in, has them challenge and argue for mediocrity as opposed to arguing for what's possible.
Right.
I would love to put out there to you that if you come across specific people that really stand out for you as a result of what you're doing, I would love to give somebody the opportunity to come on the radio and talk about where they are now, mm-hmm. and what they're doing for their community and where they could use help. Mm-hmm. And let our listeners help and support the people who are graduating from the class. Okay. I think that would be a really strong thing for them, mm-hmm. but it would also really show our listeners what you're doing and why they should back you and why they should, you know, take in your people that you've trained and partnership with you.
I also want to add, if there's anyone out there that feels that they could be a really good guest, and when I mean a guest, it's just someone to come here and share your experience or share your knowledge as far as what you've done and what you feel you can contribute to these people that are going through these courses.
And how they can possibly do what you're doing.
Yeah, I highly recommend that they actually get involved with this course. This course is just, it's an incredible experience being on the inside of it and seeing the transformation. Every time I come and then go to graduation and I hear them speak, it's amazing.
The other thing, too, is if you could take on some of these students and you know, run them through your companies, as in be a tutor, so to speak, and teach them how to do it. What Tony and I have found is there's a lot of these guys that want to get in the music world or be an actor or be a writer or just do normal things that here in Hollywood, there's a million of us doing this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So take one of these guys on and let him be your shadow and let him see what that world is like and inspire them to get out there and do what you already know how to do and take for granted on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So, you know, get involved with Clyde, people.
There's, I just say this, that these, when they come here, they're hungry. They're hungry.
Yeah.
And, you know, not like someone trying to get a job. These guys are hungry because, like, they know that this, for a lot of them, this is their last chance.
Right.
And so the first guy that I told you that came into our first class, he said, look, man, if I don't get something, I'm ready to go back to prison. He says, no, I'm not going to go back to prison. I'm going to hold court on the streets. Right. So said another way, I'm willing for you to kill me because I'm not going
to
go back to prison.
I'm willing to die for this. Yeah.
Right. And then he got actually start to see something for himself in prison was the last thing that he wanted to do after he started to see what was possible for himself. So I've been in situations where I've had to pull the trigger and you know, it's what we do because it's what we sign up to do. But at the end of the day, 20 years, 30 year career, you're still the one that has to sleep with it. You're still the one that has to deal with it. And I don't care how tough we think we are. you know, that's a hell of a burden to carry on you. And, you know, and this whole program really for me is really about giving the community the power to police itself. The way right. policing was supposed to started initially is the community policed itself, and whatever the community couldn't handle, law enforcement came in. And for some reason, we've taken on the bigger chunk of that. And this is really giving the community the handle on itself and having it make a difference where mm-hmm. it should make a difference.
Right. Yeah. You actually have the ability to change communities in the program you're doing much more than the police department ever would have the ability to change communities, because they have a structure that has to be followed, and we all understand why and what that's about. But your line of structure puts them back into our communities in a healthier manner.
You're reconditioning them, you're retraining them.
You're giving them different thoughts and beliefs and patterns, and those are the people that we want to have working with us and want to have around us and want to live next door to. So, Clyde, I absolutely appreciate everything that you're doing for us in these communities and how you're changing the lives of people. And we welcome you on our show at any time. And if you would like to keep us abreast of what's happening for you and different things that you're doing that you need funding for and this and that, we will regularly let our listeners know exactly what's up and how they can help you.
Maybe do a fundraiser, maybe get involved in helping out in some way. But we really appreciate you taking the time to speak to us. And I wanted to ask one last question before we signed off. Can other people that get involved in your course that maybe haven't gone to prison or maybe haven't? Yeah. Is there anyone like turned away for any reason? Or?
No, we take people from the community, anybody from anywhere. We've had people come all the way from Vegas and from San Diego to take the course because people have said, I've spent, you know, hundreds of dollars, you know, $500, $600, $2,000 to go to a course, and I got more from this course than I got from those courses.
Yeah.
Right,
and so
right.
I couldn't believe that I could get something free that would be this valuable.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this is a free course for everybody.
Yeah.
So
that's exactly why Clyde needs some backing here, guys.
Yeah. If I took what we do out into the corporate world or into the public sector, I could easily make a great deal of money. I mean, I'm a master NLP practitioner, and you know, we do breakthroughs and we do emotional release techniques, and we do a lot of different things, a lot of coaching, but they get it for free, and you know, the reward that I get back is more than I think that I could get paid in dollars. But if I took this out to the corporate world, I could easily, you know, do it at $1,000 a person. And fill up a room of 500 people, 1,000 people.
Easily. I totally agree with that 100%. I want to thank you also. Again, this is Clyde Terry, Emerging Leaders. His information is going to be available on our website at humanitarian.com and also Facebook, Humanitarian Radio.
And if you know somebody out there that could use Clyde's class, definitely reach out and let him know that too. I've heard some really cool stories about some officers picking people up off benches mm-hmm. on the side of the street mm-hmm. saying, dude, you need this class, and bringing them your way, Clyde. And definitely, if you know somebody out there that could use this, don't hesitate to get them involved. Reach out to Clyde. He'll find a way to get them in.
Just to end on this, our next program starts September 13th, graduates November 7th, and it'll be held at Agape International Spiritual Center.
Beautiful.
In Culver City, right?
Which is 5700 Buckingham Parkway in Culver City. Mm-hmm. And it'll be from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. And if they're interested in doing our Long Beach program, that's Monday through Friday from 4:30 to 7:30 in the same time frame, September 13th and November 7th.
Excellent. All right, guys.
Keep up the good work, Clyde.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Support you 1,000%. We encourage all you guys listening to support him in any way you can.
Thank you.
Excellent. We'll be right back after these announcements. Thanks.
Give me that best case scenario. I want to hear it full blast stereo.
Positive affirmations wrapped in pop rock songs. Motivational musician Saint Tone.
I'm a magnet. Off the money now. I'm a magnet. Off the money now.
Check out his latest live show, The Rise Up Experience, at www.sainttone.com. And pick up his newest CD, Outside the Box, available on iTunes. For music with a positive message, check out sainttone.com. And that was Clyde Terry. We really want to thank him for being part of this. It's amazing what one man can do. He can change the lives of so many out there. So,
to see who's on next week, check our schedule on humanitarianradio.com, Humanitarian Radio Facebook. And we look forward to seeing you next week. If you've got a great story to share, let us know.